T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
All right, everybody, hour three getting underway here of Sports Talk Saturday. Welcome back. Nate Geary hanging out with you today. NHL coverage of legitimate games, live games. That's happening right here on WGR, Sports Radio 550. We're going to 245 today. So if you're hanging out with me, I appreciate it. Thanks for listening. Of course, feel free to give us a call, 803-0550, 1-888-552-550. Those are the numbers to call if you want to get your thoughts, opinions in. We've kind of gone over the full spectrum. We've been talking the Bills. We've been talking college football. We've been talking a little bit. I've been teasing Major League Baseball because I really wanted to wait for this conversation with Pat. So we'll do that here in a second. So we've got a lot going on. We've still got Joe Marino coming up next at 1:30 as well. So Bills talk has not... it's not completely over. We will do some more Bills talk with Joe coming up next. But let's do the West Hur hotline right now because my man Pat Malacaro, of course, you can follow him on Twitter, at PatWGR. He is a pregame, intermission, postgame host here with the Buffalo Sabres Radio Network. And, of course, the voice, the handsome voice of Pat Malacaro. And I know why I'm having seasonal depression is because I'm not hearing your lovely voice on ESPN 1520. So, Pat, first and foremost, how is life without baseball? I imagine... like, for me, COVID really hasn't changed my day-to-day too much. I know that's not usually, like, the normal thing across America. I imagine for you it's quite weird because you've been kind of doing the same thing for years and years now. I imagine you are out of your normal schedule and routine.
Yeah, it is weird, not living in hotels for weeks at a time and, traveling back and forth has been weird. I guess I'm a little bit different, and I'm pretty good at compartmentalizing things. And as soon as April rolled around and we really knew that it would be really tough to have a season, I thought AAA maybe had a chance because, like we're seeing now, these alternate site locations, maybe that would be AAA baseball this season. I thought maybe there's some hope, so I'll keep the hope alive. But, it's just one of those things where, you find other things to do. I haven't golfed in years, and I found doing that at least once a week has been a nice relief and release. So it's finding different ways. That's all you can do, I guess.
Yeah, and listen, I've had sort of a... how do I want to put this nicely about Major League Baseball? I thought Major League Baseball was the last to put procedures together, but the first to play. And I always thought that that was going to be the wrong thing to do. And we're going to talk about Rod Manfred throughout this interview for sure. And I don't want to start there, but I do want to start with maybe even how much of the blame I don't want to put too much on the players, but the players did sign off on all of this and say, yeah, we're comfortable playing under the environment that you're putting us under the restrictions and under everything. So the players, to a certain extent, do have a little blame. I think very small percentage of it, but they agreed to play under these conditions. Having said that, yeah, they seem unprepared, Pat.
It is one of those things, and you have to go all the way back to when the sport paused in March, just like every sport did. And you saw in the NHL, even though the NHL put forth a plan that still had to be ratified, but they had a good sense that the bubble idea of two locations was going to work. Certainly the NBA and the players, they've come together, and there's more than just sports issues. We're talking about societal issues that have been discussed, and we're seeing how both leagues have worked together in that respect. So when you look at the prism of those two sports along with baseball, all three of them shut down virtually the same day. I mean, I flew back from Florida the day spring training closed down on March 13th, I think it was. You know, there was no baseball after that. That was a critical time. And I think you have to look at the big picture of where baseball is today and why some of the fans have fallen off over the course of the last couple of years. It all comes together. It starts in the offseason with the Astros and their cheating scandal and the players being granted immunity and not being punished. And we're seeing the implications for that now with Joe Kelly throwing in a player in that. So you have to kind of look at this whole thing together, and it seems like baseball really has not taken a full step in whether it's planning this out with the players, you know, all the other things that go around with it, and there hasn't been that collaborative effort, I think, that you've seen from the other leagues. And you're right. I mean, the players, their responsibility is smaller, but I do think once you decide you're going to play and you've ratified your agreement, you know, you had the opportunity to opt out. We're still seeing players today. Like I saw, I believe Lorenzo Cain has opted out. If you're going to stay playing, then you now have the responsibility of not putting yourself in a position to potentially expose yourself to the coronavirus. And that's what we're kind of seeing right now with what happened with the Miami Marlins. The owners certainly have a big responsibility, but the players have to take some of that as well. And if those two sides don't work together, this thing is not going to last more than a week or two.
And that's what it's looking like, Pat, is there's a rumors this week that the commissioner basically came out and said, if we can't get this thing under control, we're going to have to call things. And obviously that's nuclear. That's worst case scenario for Major League Baseball. Having said that, though, Pat, it's hard for me. I think that there have been a lot of failings on the behalf of Rod Manfred. I think, to your point about the whole cheating scandal, that it became, Pat, to me, almost like there was too much, that there were too many teams involved, and there are too many facets of who was cheating, how they were cheating. Turns out, you know, the Yankees were more involved, and it just became to the point where it just almost became like today's politics, where it just became exhaustive. There's too much here for the fans to diagnose, understand, and figure out how to react, that we're just becoming tired of it. And I think Major League Baseball is on that fence right now, where they do have to be careful, because the long-term and the longevity and the wealth and the health of this game moving forward relies on the fans. And if you're disenfranchising the fans, which they are doing, you know, that is going to have long-term ramifications for, you know, the collective bargaining agreements in the future. We're talking about profits and revenue. Like, all of those things are going to take a hit. And if you're going to push fans away right now, this is the worst possible time to disenfranchise fans, because this could be a make or break kind of season. You could gain long-term popularity and recognition in a sport right now. You can start a new era of baseball with the people and the eyes that you're going to be getting that you haven't gotten in the past. You're going to have better TV numbers than ever before. And yet, Pat, it still seems like they can't figure out a way to make the sport inclusive, to make the sport fun for people. Like, you mentioned the Joe Kelly thing. Like, come on, Major League Baseball. Like, that's what you're worried about right now, is you're worried about, I get it, you know, should he have gotten a suspension? Sure, he probably should have got a game or two. But like an 8-game suspension in this season with what, just, it just seems like no matter what they do, Pat, they're not getting anything right.
And I'll add another wrinkle into this conversation too, and you know, before COVID-19, you know, put everything, life on pause, Major League Baseball and the minors, their agreement where that is set to expire at the end of September, and Major League Baseball, by all reports and all accounts, had put forth a proposal to eliminate 42 teams, you know, in places as close as Batavia, you know, somewhere like Auburn, New York might be in that equation as well. You know, smaller cities where the game is at its grassroots level. And that's what I mean when I mention, you know, taking everything into account in totality, is that the commissioner's office in Major League Baseball seems more, you know, they don't seem as worried about things like that. And, you know, that agreement will expire at the end of September, and we just don't know what that means for the state of minor league baseball going forward. So, you know, you add all this together, and fans were already starting to be turned away by games that take way too long.
Right.
You know, some of the solutions don't seem like they're things that necessarily players are on board with, and when you don't have the players on board, and it's hard to get the fans on your side. So it's a lot going on right now. And, you know, I go back to a conversation I had with Brayden back in May when it seemed like Major League Baseball and the players were starting to talk a little bit. But then you have players that say, you know, they're not going to take less salary this year. And the owners are talking about how they're not going to be able to financially maybe be able to support a season with no fans. And it's that type of tone deaf, you know, rhetoric that you hear going into, and you mentioned future CBAs. The Major League Baseball and Players Agreement is up after next season. So it's going to be, it's not 5-10 years down the road. We're talking about implications on the game coming up after the 2021 season, where I think that's where players may have had a little bit of, you know, apprehension, because if you dial back salaries this year, next year you potentially go back to normal. But then after that, players could be staring down having to accept the salary cap, because it seems like the owners have the upper hand and have ever since Don Fehr left for the NHL, and the players really are in a tough spot. So the next 2 years are really a critical point, I think, for baseball beyond just the purists that love the game.
Pat Malacaro here on the Wester Hotline. Pat, this is where I think we should get into Rod Manfred and maybe the future, because for me now, my peak MLB, Major League Baseball, just baseball fandom in general, came in 2015. And since then, the game itself, you know, the team I follow has not given me many reasons. The Kansas City Royals haven't given me many reasons, you know, to turn on and get the Major League Baseball package on TV and, like, do all this stuff where I'm going to be an everyday fan of the game because I enjoy watching my team. The team has kind of let me down in their inability to maintain the momentum that they had in 2014 and 2015. They're not spending money to acquire talent. So, like, why would I watch them? And I feel the same way about a lot of teams in Major League Baseball. And that kind of leads me to Rod Manfred in this whole conversation, because for me, a fan who was very much, you know, 5 years ago, this was the peak of their fandom, I think there's a lot of people like me that are apprehensive of allowing myself to sort of dig in and go 100% into baseball right now. There are a lot of people like me, and if they're looking at Rod Manfred saying, this is the guy that I'm going to sort of put up as the guy that ruined baseball for me, like, I gotta feel the owners are in a tough spot, because the owners are the true villains here, right? Like, the owners are the ones that had to make the money. They're the ones that put out a quick, really seemingly maybe unprepared plan here to combat issues of breakouts and such like that. Like, the owners and their representation, which is the Commissioner of Baseball, Rod Manfred, they carry a lot of the responsibility here. How does he stay in his position? Like, how does he make it past this year?
I don't have a good answer for you. All I can say is you look back over the history of the different commissioners and how they've handled different, whether it's scandals, whether it's, you know, the steroid era for Bud Selig, and how he's been able to rehab his image after, you know, all that's right. Gone on in the early 2000s. I mean, Bud Selig is not looked at in a bad light necessarily. I mean, you're talking about a guy who led baseball through the expansion era, and, you know, had the steroid issue go through baseball, and he came out the other side okay. So every commissioner has these challenges, and you're going to face that. But, you know, it's pretty tough right now. You know, I guess you look at the other major sports, and it comes down to the owners, and if the money's there at the end of the day, you know, that's the name of the game. That's not just the name in sports. That's you know, life in general that's how businesses survive. So if baseball is going to weather this storm, if Rob Manfred is able to get through this, that's where you're going to see it. If it's, you know, the TV contracts continuing to be extended and the money continue to go up, even in an era where, in an age now where money is going to be tighter for sponsorships, if that is still there, then I think it's easy for the owners to say, all right, let's continue on the path we're on right now. But and that's, I think, one of the reasons why Bud Selig was able to continue on through the 2000s with the regional sports networks and all the money that we've seen teams be able to use for some players in big markets. So that is really the way I think this goes forward. And that goes back to the conversation of teams looking to consolidate other areas. Well, that's how you make up some of that money as well. And that's where some of that, the leadership from up top has come.
I think your point about Bud Selig is super interesting in this, because say what you will, right, Pat, about Bud Selig, is while he managed the future of the league, say what you will about the steroid era, that home run chase, like, and I watched the 30 for 30, it brought back a ton of young memories for me, right? Say what you will. We all know, I mean, for the most part that year, we knew that Mark McGwire was cheating. He was taking performance-enhancing drugs. It was caught in his locker, for God's sakes. That didn't stop any of us from turning the station off our regularly scheduled programming to say, oh, we got to watch Mark McGwire. He's up to bat. Like, we were turning off our, you know, normal Thursday night, you know, whatever, weekly television. We turned off 24 and we turned on, you know, TBS to watch a live in-game, or ESPN, who was switching over to Mark McGwire's at-bat. Say what you will about Bud Selig and the ramifications, the aftermath of the steroid era was definitely a difficult era to come through, because baseball needed a reckoning, a time of reckoning. And guys, in a lot of cases, didn't fess up, and I think that hurt that era. But what you got to say about Bud Selig is he really ushered in one of the most exciting eras of modern baseball. And whether or not you believe he ruined it, I mean, whatever. But at a certain point here, you said the key term, revenue and money. He made those owners during that era more money than imaginable. And that's really where I start to think that Rod Manfred is walking on thin ice. If they have to cancel the season, even if it is the owner's fault, to save face, you have to get rid of Rod Manfred. Like, you can't have Rod Manfred sit on the pedestal and take all the blame. Because at the end of the day, as much as he is the face of this, it really becomes more on the owner. So that way, I just think, like, the owners have no other choice but to find somebody else, right? Like, they're almost in that position.
Yeah, and you look back, you know, what did Bud Selig inherit back in the late 80s? Now, I was born in the mid-80s, so I can't, you know, firsthand knowledge of it, but looking back on it, he ushered in the expansion era, and that's, you know, we're talking about teams that were not in locations before that. So, yeah, it ultimately comes down to money, and look, the owners had to invest a lot of money into the testing, and I know that they have a group, I think it's in Utah, where they do all the testing in the minor leagues right now, so they already had the system set up. So it, in some sense, it wasn't as expensive. But now you're talking about getting tests out and all these different, you know, all the different things that go into trying to put together a 60-game season. And if that has to come to a halt, because, you know, I think this is the big weekend. If the Cardinals, if the spread within the team is contained to just a player, maybe one more, and the coaches that have tested positive already, maybe you can continue on. But if we see what happened with the Marlins last weekend, happened to the Cardinals, I think this is, now you're talking the nightmare scenario. How do you, because then the question becomes, how do you keep this from happening in other teams over the next 2 months? And I think the answer is, it's just not possible if you just cannot catch it right away.
All right, Pat, before I let you go, let's get one NHL thought in here. It starts tonight. Well, it starts today, obviously, but with the Rangers and Carolina Hurricanes currently going on in action right now. What are you expecting from the NHL? It does appear anyways that, like, NHL and the NBA have both, I thought, put together procedures, put together a return-to-play formula that I will think ultimately works. What are you most looking forward to for the NHL restart? And I don't even really want to bring the Sabres into the equation, because it's a big-time disappointment that they're not playing. No one's going to disagree with that at this point, but what are you expecting from the NHL return to hockey?
Well, I'm most interested to see teams like Colorado and Vegas, and the teams that had a lot of momentum on their side and were playing really well when the league shut down at the beginning of March. I mean, Vegas to me was maybe the most interesting team, from where they started the year, firing the head coach, bringing in a new coach, and seemingly just taking off like a rocket from almost New Year's on. And what they were able to do, will those teams be able to replicate or get back to that level of play that they were at before? Or does the layoff now affect them to the point where they're not able to turn the switch back on, and you're going to see, you know, if there's an upset, you know, if a team like Edmonton moves on to the second round, or Edmonton or Chicago, whichever one of those two moves on, are they able to upset a high seed because they've played a couple harder games, and, right, you know, they have something clicking already. So to me, that's the most interesting part. And then, you know, I'm just looking forward to it playing out over the next couple of months for something to just, you know, look forward to and get ready for hopefully what is the start of a new season come December.
Yeah, fingers crossed, man. You know, and it sucks for if you're a Sabres fan having to wait 10 months to watch your team play hockey. I just... It's a really tough spot to be in, and I know it's got to be an even more difficult position for the players, who I can just imagine how anxious they are to get back to play. Pat, thanks so much for making time for me today, man. I do really appreciate it. I look forward to getting on the course with you soon. I know Brian and I have been trying to coordinate that, so we'll get you out on the course soon, and looking forward to it, buddy. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Nate. Sounds good.
Awesome. Pat Mellencarlo there on the West Hur Hotline. Quick timeout. I got Joe Marino coming up next here from the Draft Network and Locked On Bills. That's all coming up on WGR. This music definitely sounds like a legend's about to come on. Like a mythical creature.
This sounds like a game that you maybe played for 45 minutes on PS4 because it was on sale. And you were just like, yeah, sure, I'll try it. And you were like, wow, this is really atmospheric, but I don't know if I'm really
interested. So there's no online play is what you're... Okay,
no.
I'm done. Yeah, I'm done. That's... The story mode is I can only go so far in this story mode. Let's go to the Western Hotline now because my man Joe Marino joins me from Locked On Bills. He's the host over there at the Locked On Bills podcast and also of the Draft Network. Joe, welcome, my friend. Hope all is well. Hope you're enjoying the warm southern weather down there in Charlotte.
Doing well, Nate. Certainly hope you are, and thanks for having me on.
How's your golf game going? Have you been getting out at all or what? I know with a kid now, it's probably far less frequent, but how's it going?
The golf game is not going well at all. I haven't even got out this year, which is pretty disappointing. You know, learning how to live now that we've had our first child and, like, balancing my wife working full-time, me working full-time, kind of, you know, luckily I have a lot of flexibility and that, you know, taking care of the baby, have not been able to hit the links. But, definitely don't challenge me right now.
Well, they say golf is a young man and an old man sport because when you're in your middle age, you typically don't have the time, resources, energy. And this is proving true with you, Joe, which, hey, you know, you're a dad first, which is the most important thing that we can, especially nowadays with everything going on. So don't worry about that. Your golf game is going to recover. I'm pretty confident in that. But, hey, you know, I wanted to bring you on, and I wanted to talk about the big sexies, about the offensive line, because, you know, I talked about a little bit about this earlier with Sal, and this will be the first question I ask you because I think that you can expand pretty broadly on this. And that's sort of with John Feliciano out, and let's just say I think that his return date of kind of circling that Las Vegas Raiders game as sort of his return to football, I'd say is pretty optimistic, but it's definitely possible. I would just say that's probably more optimistic. I think it's probably safer to say he'll miss closer to half the year or at least close to a quarter or more of the season. So with that said, what is your best case scenario for how they replace Feliciano? Because I don't necessarily think the best case scenario is moving Cody Ford down and him playing really well. As much as I think that's a good scenario, I don't think it's the best one. What do you got for me?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I feel like naturally a lot of people want to just slide Cody Ford over and have him play guard. And this is what I'll say about that. If Cody Ford's your right tackle, then he's your right tackle. And you need him to play right tackle. His best value to the football team, the best value to him in his career is to be able to make it at tackle. And I think that's where the Bills want him to be. And when you look at guard, it does feel like the Bills have answers and options. I think, you know, John Feliciano, 1 year left on his deal, but there's a mix of guys between Spencer Long. You've got Evan Bame, who's been a rostered NFL lineman for several years. Darrett Williams, who the Bills think can play on the right side at either tackle or guard. And then, of course, kind of the X factor there being Ryan Bates, who the Bills have control of him for the next three seasons. And he's interesting to me because as you look at this Bills depth chart and you look at the roster projections and, you know, the challenging decisions that are coming ahead for Brandon Bean, they're going to need some low-cost players to really fill roles and really overachieve. When you think about Ryan Bates, a guy that's owed $675,000 this year, $850,000 next year, and then a restricted free agent in 2022, there's a lot of good control there and a very low-cost type player. And, you know, if they could lock down a starting position with that type of a contract, that'd be very meaningful. So, you know, there's certainly veterans, there's some younger players, but I'm not that quick to slide over Cody Ford because, again, as I said at the beginning, if he's your right tackle, he's your right tackle.
Yeah, and I think I probably agree with you there. I've been kind of hammering home that I always kind of wanted to see Cody Ford get. I think that's where I wanted to see him for the long term. But my argument and my thought process now goes to the longevity of the right tackle position if you bring Cody Ford. Because let me tell you this, Joe. If you bring Cody Ford down, I don't think there's going back. Like, I don't think you bring Cody Ford down for six games, all of training camp, to move him back to tackle when John Feliciano's back. So, and on top of that, I think that there's probably good authority that this team really likes John Feliciano as a long-term option at right guard. And if you bring Cody Ford down and he becomes that long-term answer, then you're probably moving on from John Feliciano. And then you're worried about, well, what do we do about the long-term health of the right tackle position? Because now we have to replace a position that we were basically relying on a second-year pro in a rookie contract, a young guy that's growing into that position to be there for a long time. So, like, to your point, maybe you're building off of Cody Ford being moved likely, I don't want to say messes up, but it certainly changes the future of how you planned out the positions across the offensive line.
For sure. And really, Cody Ford's your only tackle under contract.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Track beyond this year. And so you get very complicated with that type of a situation. And, you know, I just feel like there's enough answers at guard before you start messing with your forecast at right tackle and messing with Cody Ford's development at right tackle. The best thing for Cody Ford is to be him having a position, staying there, developing the technique and nuance that goes into playing that position well. If you're going to continue to bounce him around, he's never going to lock down any one position. And, you know, we all love versatility, and in a pinch, you like to be able to move guys around. But Cody Ford's a young football player that did not start a ton of games in the Big 12. He had a big adjustment moving to the NFL last year. And the guy needs to stick in the spot, learn the technique, and get it down. And by continuing to play musical chairs with him specifically, I just feel like it's to the detriment of his long-term development.
So, Joe, where does Darrell Williams fit on this? I know you kind of mentioned him as with the versatility to play both guard and tackle. I think I'm in the camp of keep him on the right side. I don't really care where he plays. Sale seems to think they like him at tackle, have him, you know, as that third piece of competition at that right tackle position. But, again, now let's say they end up moving Spencer Long in there or Evan Bayham, or they go with, you know, Ryan Bates, right? Like, let's say Ryan Bates wins the right guard job coming out of camp. That means there's three guys at right tackle, and you're probably not going to keep three guys at right tackle who all aren't going to go over and have the versatility to play on the left side. So where does that leave Darrell Williams if he's unable to make a move down to guard on the right side?
Well, I anticipate the Bills will keep nine offensive linemen, and I feel like they do like Darrell Williams. I mean, they're paying him $2.5 million here on a one-year deal. Obviously, they're familiar with him, and certainly we know McBean loves familiarity. And so I don't think he has the flexibility to play on the left side. He's played left tackle. He played it poorly. But I do think Ty Nsekhe, I mean, that was kind of the story on him coming into Buffalo, is that his best position has been left tackle. And so I do think that he gives you that swing ability. And then you have a situation where Darrell Williams can play tackle and guard. And so I feel good about that flexibility at tackle. And considering I do think the Bills will keep 9 offensive linemen, I do think that there's a place for him. And they could, you know, that's one thing that could be an option at right guard is seeing where Darrell Williams can fit into the mix of, you know, Spencer Long, Ryan Bates. But there's enough versatility with that depth that I think that the Bills are in pretty good shape as long as Cody Ford's able to lock down right tackle. Then I think things get a little bit dicey if that's not the case.
So, you know, Deion Dawkins, here's the thing. I don't think we actually talk enough about Deion Dawkins. I don't think he's like some top 5 player at his position, but I do think he's grossly underrated and likely underappreciated. He's obviously on the docket for an extension, and I think probably a pretty sizable one. Where do you stand in terms of the importance of Deion Dawkins and the continuity that you keep talking about and preaching about how this offensive line success has really derived from their ability to play together as a unit? Therefore, where does Deion Dawkins maybe slide on the Richter scale of importance for you, and how important is it for him to get locked up long-term?
Well, I think Deion Dawkins is probably at least an average left tackle in the NFL, a starting left tackle, and a player that Sean McDermott drafted in 2017 as a second-round pick, moved up to get him, winds up being a 3-year starter so far, team captain last year. We saw him bounce back from some struggles in 2018, but it's hard to really, you know, put all of the blame on him considering he's playing next to guys like Vlad Dukas and Wyatt Teller, and you know, you got Russell Bodine at center, and it's a situation where he goes from playing next to Richie Incognito and Eric Wood to guys that are not rostered anymore in the NFL. And so, you know, that was a tough 2018 for him, but you learn how he bounced back, changed his shot, changed his diet, changed his workout routine, and became a team captain. And I think that says a lot about him and his importance to the football team. And you can lock down that left tackle spot. I think it would be to your benefit. Now, he's going to be expensive. I mean, average left tackles in the NFL get paid $14-15 million a year. So that's a big pill to swallow and a massive increase from what you're paying him right now. So that can go into it. But, you know, I try to draw as many parallels as I can, Nate, to what happened with McDermott and Bean in Carolina. And they had Jordan Gross at left tackle in 2011. He retired. And every single year since 2011, including last year, the Carolina Panthers had a different primary starter at left tackle. You kind of feel like maybe that is part of their own issue in terms of not being able to find the right guy, but they're not going to want to have that revolving door of issues at a premium spot as their franchise quarterback's blindside protector. They saw the hits that Cam Newton took because they were never able to get that left tackle job done. If they feel comfortable with Deion Dawkins, who's not been injured, who's been a durable player, and you feel like you can really just solidify that and not worry about your left tackle spot, I feel like that brings a lot of value despite, you know, committing $14, $15 million a year, most likely in cap space, to him.
So then let me build off that with you, Joe. Do you think the ceiling has already been reached if you're Deion Dawkins? Like, are you going to pay a guy $14 million? He's still young. Okay, he was a young player coming out. Is there still meat on the bone there for him to develop?
Well, I think the best evidence that I could point to that he can develop is the jump that he made from 2018 to 2019, and we saw growth there. And, you know, if 2019 is as good as he'll ever be, then we know he's at least an average left tackle in the NFL. But, you know, I don't know that I looked back at last year and felt like he was a player that's plateaued. And so I have reason to believe in year two with Bobby Johnson, with more stability next to him, with Quentin Spain at left guard, that combination is locked up. I mean, Quentin Spain for the next 3 years at least. You know, you feel like he does have an opportunity to continue to grow in his role. Now, he came into the league, I think he started over 50 games at Temple. So, you know, it's not like he came in with a ton of, you know, just hasn't played and you feel like he's got to learn the position.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, just stability with offensive line coach, stability with players around him, you know, this is going to be the start. This would be the first time in his career he's had the same starter next to him at left guard. And things like that are going to matter, and that's going to give you reasons to believe that, you know, maybe there is better football ahead for a guy like Dawkins.
We've got Locked On Bills host and general draft genius here, Joe Marino, on the Western Hotline with me. Joe, I want to move to the other big uglies on the other side, because obviously news this week about Star Lotulelei opting out certainly creates a – I want to be – I want to be careful by saying it creates a hole, and I maybe want to phrase it as it creates an opportunity for the one tech position. Obviously, Harrison Phillips coming off the ACL injury, getting a full offseason, although an interesting one to say the least, of recovery for Harrison Phillips. I think it happened early enough in the season last year where we shouldn't see too much residual effects from it. He's almost a full year removed from the injury. What behind Harrison Phillips can we expect from the one technique position, knowing there are some new faces in the door?
You know, it's interesting. We've kind of learned from McDermott that he likes to keep four defensive tackles. And when you factored Star of Lukule into this mix and you thought about Harrison Phillips coming back and Vernon Butler and Ed Oliver and Quentin Jefferson, who they signed, you're looking at Harrison Phillips as potentially your fifth defensive tackle. And the reality was, by that Bengals game, that Giants game, he was playing about the same amount of snaps as Star Lukule. He was already eating into that. And so you do worry about him coming back and being ready to play a significant amount of snaps. But, to me, it clears up the logjam a bit. Now, you don't like that for, in terms of depth. And now you're a little bit thinner. And as injuries inevitably happen throughout the course of an NFL season, you're not as quite as equipped for that. But you have to feel good about the potential of him coming back and playing a sizable role. But what I also think here is, we've kind of thought about Quentin Jefferson as a guy that's going to play a good bit of defensive end and defensive tackle. And now maybe he doesn't play as much defensive end. And now you have Trent Murphy, who we've been pretty dismissive of, it feels like, because of his cap figure, but still a guy who played well down the stretch late last year that's further removed from that ACL tear that has been a starter for this football team. And so, maybe he continues to play a meaningful amount of snaps to go with E.J. Epenesa behind Addison and Hughes, and then you really allow Jefferson to focus on being an interior-type player and, making sure that you're stocked full there where, Star Lukule has opted out. And, I know that Jefferson may be not a natural fit at one tech, but you do have that in Harrison Phillips as well as a Vernon Butler, where I think he's best utilized. So, it cleans it up a little bit, but that's not necessarily a good thing.
Joe Marino here on the West Tur Hotline. How about we talk about linebacker too? Because I'm not going to lie, we all were trying to make the cryptic Nigel Bradham tweet about him being re-signed by the Buffalo Bills. And I'm not going to lie to you, I looked at that and I thought to myself, I could get down. I mean, if they're going to play more three linebacker sets, I'd like to see somebody slightly more athletic in something. I don't want to say better, but I just want to say maybe someone that's going to be less of a liability in the pass game than an A.J. Klein. Having said that, he ends up signing elsewhere. He's not going to be here in Buffalo. Where do you think the state of the linebackers currently is, considering Matt Milano is still with a year left on his contract? There has been no real rumors about an extension in place there. So I guess we could say we're looking at this from a future and now perspective, but where are your state of the linebackers right now?
Well, the Bills are going to be in sub a ton, so you're going to see primarily Milano and Edmonds on the field, and you got to feel great about that, but there's big-time question marks after that. A.J. Klein is fine in a 10-15 snap, a roll game, playing downhill as a Sam linebacker, but like you said, you don't want him playing a ton in space and in coverage. That's not really where he's going to find much success. But the depth is completely unknown, and Corey Thompson's been around for a little bit, but who's really seen him play any type of extended action to really have a feel of, what he's going to do in game situations. Vashawn Joseph is basically, a redshirt type player that was a rookie fifth round pick last year that's coming back. And, we're not familiar with what he's going to be in the NFL. And Tyrell Dotson's in the mix. And, I think Tyrell Dotson, the team kind of hanging on to him through his suspension and stuff says a lot about what they think he can be, but completely unproven. And so there's a lot to be concerned about in terms of the depth at linebacker, and as long as nobody gets injured, things will be fine. But, I think that depth at linebacker is very much an underrated concern for this team.
All right, last thing, Joe, before I let you go. The Bills made some news this week, yesterday, signing a couple of players, one at the cornerback position. I know where you sort of stand on the whole Josh Norman conversation. I think it was... Jeez, I can't remember who it was. It was somebody maybe from the Buffalo News that came out this week with one of their 53-man roster projections, one of them having Josh Norman actually getting a surprise cut. like there are still starters available in free agency. Like Logan Ryan's a guy I'm looking at right now, right? Like, is it surprising to you that they still haven't been trying to add maybe one more guy that could compete for the start? I just don't think EJ Gaines is actually going to be competing for a starting spot. So therefore, to me, there's two guys, Levi Wallace, who you're trying to upgrade from, and Josh Norman, who's essentially a bit of an unknown. Like, wouldn't it make sense to maybe consider roll the dice on a veteran who might be able to provide better than those two?
I'd certainly be wanting to do it if I was Brandon Bean and upgrading the cornerback room. I have great concern about, you know, Josh Norman being able to come back and restore his career at this point, given, you know, a guy that never really had athleticism and is, you know, 32 years old and struggled. I know it was a man coverage scheme with Washington, but, you know, there's a certain baseline of mobility that you're going to need even in zone type coverage. But I guess the silver lining here is that the floor is Levi Wallace, and with Levi Wallace, the Bills were able to have a top three defense each of the last 2 years. And, you know, McDermott, throughout his entire career, you know, really he's pieced together this CB2 type situation, whether it was Peanut Tillman in Carolina or Drayton Florence in Carolina, or even taking a roll of the dice at a guy like Vontae Davis in Buffalo, and now Josh Norman. It's kind of been the thing with McDermott. He's always figured it out. That's
true
about him. And so as much as I have great concern about, you know, wishing Levi Wallace was a more gifted player with a higher ceiling opposite of Trey White, or, you know, my reservations about Josh Norman being able to get his career back on track, I guess you go back to McDermott and say, no matter what, he's figured it out, and pass defense has never been a problem. So I'd have handled it differently, but he gets it done.
They have earned the benefit of the doubt, Joe. There's no doubt about it. So in these situations where I think all of us look at it and say, you know, maybe I'm doing this differently, they've earned the respect. They've, through, I think, both success and generally speaking, just good decisions, they've earned the benefit of the doubt for us to not to necessarily question them on a position that, especially to your point, McDermott has always figured out a way. I think that's a really kind of good way to point to what they've done historically at the cornerback position. And I think you're spot on. They've always found a way, and they're always getting more out of less. So I agree with you. I think they've earned the right to maybe side skirt criticism on what they're going to do at the cornerback position.
Well, dating back to 2011 when McDermott became the defensive coordinator in Carolina, he's coached the top 10 defense in four of the last six seasons in the NFL. You know, so again, I'd have handled it differently. I would have drafted a cornerback earlier than the seventh round. I would have had, you know, some younger talent in there, especially knowing that Trey White's going to get a big payday coming up here. And look, it's going to be a popular place to go with the football. If I'm going to try to complete a pass against the Bills defense, I'm going at CB2. And you know, with the depth of receivers and more 11 personnel in the NFL than ever before right now, that, you know, it's going to be challenging for that spot, and they're going to get a lot of targets. And so, you know, McDermott will have to figure out how to bracket and help over there, and Trey White may have more on his plate. But it goes back to, you know, defensive success and Sean McDermott have pretty much been synonymous for a while now.
All right, Joe, appreciate the time, brother. Enjoy your weekend. I hope you can get out to the golf course soon, although you have a significantly longer season than I will, so
yeah.
I have the feeling you'll be able to get out at some point this year. So I appreciate it, brother. Thanks for the time.
Of course, Nate. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Joe Marino there on the Wester Hotline. Locked On Bills, Draft Network. Of course, you can follow him at TheJoeMarino on Twitter. Quick timeout. We've got another 45 minutes after this timeout coming up next year. Sports Talk Center, the extended version. We've got NHL action coming up next year on WGR. Okay, hour three was a disgusting success. Like, it was grossly successful because Pat Millicaro was great, Joe Marino was great. We've got a slightly tweaked hour three coming your way. You're going to hear from Sal Capaccio and Bruce Nolan, who joined the program earlier on. And that's going to lead you right into NHL hockey, which is live coverage of the NHL restart. It's going to be right here starting at around 2:45. It's going to be on WGR. So stick with us. We've got more interviews and then NHL hockey all coming your way on WGR.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.